The next case is 04-1064, Mahoning County Bar Association versus R. Allen Sinclair. Mr. Stern.
May it please the court, Jeffrey Stern. Seated at council table with me is my partner, Christopher Weber, and the respondent, R. Allen Sinclair. I would respectfully request 6 minutes reserved, please. This court has articulated consistently and for decades, starting perhaps in the Lieberman case in the 50s, but for decades, that the purpose of the disciplinary system is not to punish. The purpose of the disciplinary system is alternatively phrased to protect the public, to safeguard the integrity of the courts, to enhance the legal profession, and those standards. The guiding principle that was stated by this court in the Finelli case is the public interest and the right to practice a profession imbued with the public trust. We respectfully submit that the position of the Youngstown, the Mahoning County Bar Association, in this case, and the Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline on sanction, ordering a 2-year flat suspension, does move into the area of punishment when one considers the very, very substantial mitigation evidence that was adduced at the hearing. The panel in this case, as you know, recommended a sanction of 24 months, stay 18, in an extremely detailed and, we would respect, searching opinion that I respectfully submit detail. I have reflected the kind of hearing they had in this case, the panel consisting of Mr. Alkire, Mr. Bettler, and Ms. Ferson. Testimony at length was heard from Craig Morford, the assistant United States attorney who prosecuted Mr. Traficant, and Richard Denholm, the head of the FBI agent that the FBI unit, the special agent of the FBI, who investigated Mr. Traficant. Three undisputed character witnesses were heard. Several letters involving character traits were introduced. And the result of that was a 20-page recommendation from the panel, 79 paragraphs, going into what it regarded as the seriousness of Mr. Sinclair's conduct and the meritoriousness of the mitigation evidence that had been adduced. That recommendation, that unanimous recommendation of the panel, went to the board, and the board, in one not necessarily cryptic but certainly short phrase, said, based on the nature and seriousness of the offenses, we levy a 2-year suspension of Mr. Sinclair. And this was notwithstanding all of that evidence, and it's fully in the brief, so I won't repeat it this morning, but his full cooperation in the disciplinary process. The statement by my opposing counsel, Mr. Slipsky, at the hearing, volunteered the statement, and I quote, "I will tell you right up front that I have no evidence that Mr. Sinclair's character is anything but good." The entire history for the last 4 to 5 years of Mr. Sinclair, since the events involving Mr. Traficant, have been meritorious, rehabilitative, and mitigative, if you will.
Mr. Stern, the issue here seems to be what value your client's cooperation in the prosecution of Congressman Traficant played as it relates to discipline. We can look at the activities and the conduct he engaged in and compare that to other disciplinary cases for lawyers who've engaged in similar conduct. But it seems to me the overlaying factor is his his ability and his effort to serve as a witness during a criminal prosecution. Do you have any cases where that has interplayed or interfaced with attorney discipline?
Your Honor, no cases that we could find. Certainly couldn't find any Ohio cases.
So this is really a first impression case for us to consider with respect to that issue.
Yes, and in that connection, I would respectfully submit that from the period of his misconduct and the decision that he made and proceeding forward, that his contribution in the view of the witnesses in the case was unprecedented, was unparalleled, was significant. Above and beyond that, at the same time, he built a substantial practice of individual plaintiffs' PI clients, which the kind of clients has been a factor that this court has looked at. It looked at it in the Smith case, a case that had 8 disciplinary violations and a 6-month stay suspension substantially on the clientele. In the disciplinary context, I would respectfully suggest that to this court and throughout the record, there is no possibility. It's hard to say no possibility, but I will respectfully say to you, no possibility of these events ever repeating themselves. There hasn't been a hint of any conduct that would be questionable on Mr. Sinclair's part in the last 4 or 5 years, since the time when he said, "This is wrong," and he went to the FBI. And I want to make it clear, because I think Mr. Slipsky's brief is not entirely accurate in this regard. He turned over the evidence to the FBI of the bags that Mr. Traficant stood behind him and held his shoulder and said, "Burn them." He turned that over to the FBI before he had a proffer, before he had an immunization, before he was subpoenaed. And I think that's important. I think that Mr. Slipsky would make this out to be entirely a cynical, venal kind of calculation. Sure, he was interested in getting immunity, although it had been suggested originally by the FBI and by the United States Attorney. But it wasn't anywhere nearly as cold and calculating. And I would respectfully say to you that the history of the mitigation here just doesn't bespeak of cold or calculating. On behalf of Mr. Sinclair, we stipulated in this case an A4. We stipulated an A6. We also know that an A4 carries a rebuttable presumption of time off. This is not flippant or lighthearted or anything like that. This was serious, serious stuff. And I think the panel recognized it. One way of looking at their decision is 24 months off for the misconduct that occurred, 18 months stayed, recognizing the mitigation that occurred. We have seen cases from this court various times. We certainly have seen a number of A4 cases since Feuerbach where time off has been reduced in several cases to the level of no time off, depending on the state of the evidence, depending on the state of the mitigation. If there are no further questions, I will reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Stern. Mr. Slipsky.
May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, Mr. Stern, Mr. Sinclair, Mr. Weber. I'm Ron Slipsky, and I'm here on behalf of the Mahoning County Bar Association. It's my understanding, since we both filed objections, Mr. Chief Justice, that I also can reserve some time for rebuttal. I will try to reserve 5 minutes. There is no grievance in this case like there is in a typical disciplinary action. This case came to us through the media. Mr. Sinclair did not come to the Mahoning County Bar Association. He did not go to Ohio Disciplinary Council when he knew he was going to testify against Congressman Traficant and say, "I have a problem, I need some help." We learned of it through the media, and then we began our investigation. As a result of our investigation, we found not one but 3 fact patterns that we felt which were facts that should have been disciplined. The first one is the fact that Mr. Sinclair gave $2,500 per month out of his federal paycheck back to Congressman Traficant in return for getting the job. The second one is that during his tenure with Congressman Traficant, he prepared a quitclaim deed for the purpose of avoiding future creditors by transferring his farm to his daughter. And because of Mr. Sinclair's knowledge as an attorney of the effect of that deed, he refused to place his name on it. And in fact, by omission, created a fraudulent document and put on it that in fact Congressman Traficant prepared the deed, not him. The third item, and I think the board and the panel both missed this one, and hopefully I'll have time to get to it, is that he leased space to Congressman Traficant. And there's all of this stuff about House ethics rules in the briefs, and they came up at the hearing and whatnot. Those are kind of irrelevant, as far as I'm concerned, in the Mahoning County Bar Association. The point is that was required to get the job. That was part of the deal to get the job. And as Craig Morford testified at the hearing, if it was part of the deal to get the job, it was a criminal bribe. And that's the third part of our case. The panel found violations in regards to the kickback and in regards to the quitclaim deed. They did not in returns in respect to the office space, but that's because we think they missed the point. The point is it was part of the deal to get the job. The panel recommended 2 years with 18 months off. We were disappointed, but we were not surprised. If you had been at that hearing with me, you would not have been surprised either. The board was more appropriate, we think, but didn't go far enough in recommending 2 years off. When we began the hearing, Mahoning County Bar Association asked for a permanent disbarment because of the actions of Alan Sinclair leading up to his testimony. As a result of the mitigation testimony, at the end of the hearing, we agreed that maybe an indefinite suspension was more appropriate. And that, I think that's all the mitigation, and I hope to explain why, should get Mr. Sinclair. The hearing was all about mitigation. Everything else was stipulated. Everything literally was stipulated. And I was concerned going into that hearing. And in my opening remarks, and I quoted them, I think, in our answer brief, I pointed out to the panel that this mitigation evidence is going to be pretty good. It's live. And we're all subject to human nature. And live testimony is always better than a bunch of pages typewritten where the respondent has admitted his wrongdoing. We've brought two objections to this court. One is that we believe it should be an indefinite suspension, not 2 years off. And also, we believe that this court should change the finding in regards to the rental of the office space. Three of the five objections filed, they filed three, we filed two. Three of those five all relate to what the sanction ought to be. So I'd like to jump right into that fire right now and talk about the Paul Gambrell case, if you will. We rely on the Paul Gambrell case and the David Walter Hartsock case because we believe that they are the cases most applicable to the case here. And we believe that Mr. Sinclair's conduct is much more egregious than the conduct in the Gambrell and Hartsock cases. And in both of those cases, those individuals received an indefinite suspension. In the Paul Gambrell case, Paul Gambrell gave one $2,500 kickback to a nationwide insurance agent to get a settlement, one, and he received an indefinite suspension. Now, they try to distinguish that case, and hopefully I'll distinguish it as we go along, but I'd like to take a different tact in distinguishing it than the respondent has, and that is that unlike this case, Paul Gambrell honed up to what he did wrong, and he accepted the consequences. He didn't go down kicking and fighting and screaming about how wonderful he was. Here the respondent fights on. Amazingly, he tells you in his briefs that he has made a major contribution to the public interest. He tells you that he's someone who tells the truth. He tells you that he's someone who's very valuable to the justice system. And what does he use to prove that? His mitigation evidence. His mitigation evidence. That's all that he has to convince you that he is those things. As I told the panel when I argued, and I'll ask you, there's two questions you have to keep asking about his mitigation evidence. When and why? When did he decide to cooperate and why? Well, as he began his testimony, as we found out about it in the media, he didn't come to us. He didn't come to a disciplinary council. He didn't go to anybody. He simply went forward and testified. At the time he entered into this...
How valuable was his testimony to the FBI? Would Traficant have been convicted without his testimony?
I don't think anybody has speculated as to whether or not...
I mean, were there other people that came forward and testified in a like manner?
According to Mr. Morford, Mr. Sinclair's testimony was crucial. But when did he decide to testify? The FBI came to him first. He didn't go to the FBI. The FBI came to him and didn't even know at that point that he had been engaging in the conduct that he was engaging in. They came and asked about Henry de Blasio, who has subsequently resigned with discipline pending. They asked him about that. They didn't ask him about himself. At that point, he didn't say, oh, by the way, I've got a problem. Maybe I can help. That's someone with great moral values would have done that. Are we so cynical to believe that all of us human beings, and especially lawyers, are going to always act in our self-interest? They're not pointing the finger at me, so I'm not going to tell. What did he do after the first meeting with the FBI? What did he do? He didn't say anything. He went back and talked to Traficant. He told Traficant, I've met with the FBI. Traficant said, don't do that again. What happens next? Another meeting with the FBI. This time, out of sheer chance, Craig Morford asks him, because Craig Morford had a feeling in his gut that there was something more going on, so he says off the cuff, by the way, what are you kicking back to Congressman Traficant? And I'll quote, when I asked him the question, he was very startled. He gave me what I thought was a 1,000-yard stare. I could tell he didn't know what to do at that point. He seemed very confused, and this is the part that I think is important. He said something to the effect of, I'm not going to help you get Traficant or something. Second meeting with the FBI, he's still looking to help Congressman Traficant out. Is that a great value to the justice system? Is that someone who's contributing to the public interest? I think not. Craig Morford described it, and the way it was given back to me was that Mr. Sinclair at that point just sort of stared at the agent like a deer in headlights and then said, you know, I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to sit here and answer those kinds of questions or something like that, or, you know, I don't want to be part of the Traficant movement, something like that. What did he do after the second meeting?
Excuse me. I think the gist of your argument is that his mitigation is his testifying to his own misdeeds. And so that should somehow merit a lesser disciplinary action because he fessed up to his own misdeeds.
That's
not so much that he got Traficant, but he fessed up to his own misdeeds.
That's their argument. My argument is he fessed up to his own wrongdoing for his own selfish purpose. Number one, he's never been prosecuted. Mr. Traficant is sitting in jail right as we speak.
And isn't that a huge break that he got as a direct result of his turning state's evidence? He got a break.
Absolutely.
A huge break.
Absolutely, I mean, a huge break.
He could have been convicted and sitting in jail now for his own misdeeds, could he not?
That's possible. And that goes to the second question, the when we've sort of talked about with the two FBI meetings. The reason is why? Because he wanted to contribute to the justice system? Because he wanted to contribute to the public interest? I think not. He wanted to save Alan Sinclair's skin is what he wanted to do, and he knew how to go about doing it. And yes, he was very valuable in the conviction of Traficant. There's no doubt about that. But he's been paid well for that testimony. He didn't say, let me testify against Jim Traficant because what occurred is wrong. He did it for himself. He did it for himself. I believe I've run out of time, so I will save my last 5 minutes.
You have about a little less than 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Slipsky. Mr. Stern, you've saved about a little over 6.5 minutes, six and a half minutes.
Mr. Slipsky seems to indicate that there is some kind of responsibility to self-report and I think ignores some of the facts of what happened here. Mr. Traficant was indicted In the indictment, there was a reference to another person that we believe was Mr. Sinclair. That identity was leaked to the Youngstown Vindicator and blasted all over the place. Subsequent to that time, Mr. Sinclair sought counsel, and subsequent to that time, we agreed with the Mahoning County Bar Association at least two or three times over two or three years that they would defer their disciplinary action, their investigation, until the Traficant criminal litigation was completed. So I don't think it's fair or accurate to indicate that he was hiding somewhere in a dark corner, because that's just not the truth. On the matter of the—
Counsel, was he approached by the Bar Association about the disciplinary proceedings, or did he approach the Bar Association and say, let me take care of this pending criminal matter, and then we'll talk about my license?
The article appeared, Your Honor, in the Youngstown Vindicator one day. The next day, the Bar Association, a staff person at the Bar Association, sent a standard form letter to him. It was obviously a form because it talked about a grievance having been filed and all this and all that. By that time, he had retained our firm. We contacted the Mahoning County Bar Association promptly, and that began the history.
After he got the letter, he got counsel. That's what you're saying.
I think that I cannot recall whether it was virtually at the same time. It certainly was within a day or so of the letter, and it may have been earlier. I can't recall. But he certainly had counsel promptly, and we responded and communicated, and cooperated fully with the Mahoning County Bar. On this matter of the lease of the property, the facts are just contrary to the implication that Mr. Slipsky has. The property was leased to Mr. Traficant, continuing a lease situation that had been with Mr. Sinclair's law partner. The rental that was paid was $6 a square foot. There was an independent appraisal that it was $6.56. So it certainly was within the range. The matter was publicly disclosed, and there is not one place in the record of this case where a house rule is specifically mentioned, nor the breach of any house rule. And I think Mr. Slipsky knows that because he's attempted to move the attention away from a house rule. That just wasn't there. On the deed, we have briefed it. I would only say this, that if one regards the omission of his name and the substitution of Mr. Traficant's name on the deed as misconduct, that's what the panel did. And that's what the panel factored in the 24 Stay 18 sanction. He cites the Gambrell case. He has been talking about Mr. Gambrell since the day of this hearing. Mr. Gambrell was convicted of a federal felony. Mr. Gambrell fully stipulated his case. Mr. Gambrell did not introduce an iota of mitigation evidence. Big contrast here. The Hartsock case, which is a companion case, the respondent in that case stipulated an indefinite suspension. It was not they meted out an indefinite suspension. He stipulated. He had no hearing. And that's what he also cited in his brief, the resignations of three attorneys who were in this Youngstown vortex. What you folks know what's involved in a resignation because you get the confidential report. But it doesn't say anything to us when the resignation is made with disciplinary action pending.
Counsel, let me ask you a question about count three. It's the bribing of Traficant so that he would give your client a job. That's in essence of what the allegation is, that in order for your client to work for Traficant, he also had to lease space to Traficant.
There were, as I understand it, Your Honor, three conditions of employment. One, $2,500
a month. Kickback, that's different.
Which has a clear bank record there on that. Two, the leasing of the premises, which was leased at fair market value. And three, that Mr. Sinclair would have the option of engaging in the private practice of law so long as it didn't interfere with his responsibilities to trafficking.
So had he decided that, no, I had other use for that building, and Mr. Traffigan, I'm not going to lease you the space, that was not a contingent of his employment?
We can assume that, I'm going to make some assumptions here, that Mr. Traficant was a very well-known, strong-willed individual who liked his own way. It is very possible that if he said, no, I'm not going to lease this building, he would not have had the job. Mr. Traficant liked that space because it was in the suburbs of Mahoning County. Mr. Traficant had an aversion to even the nicest federal building downtown. He preferred, and he used to sleep there. He would come in on Thursday night and sleep there. So I think that describes as best as I can the picture. I would conclude by saying and requesting this court to consider the totality of the evidence, the misconduct, the mitigation, and whether the recommendations of the Mahoning County Bar Association you have heard this morning do constitute a punishment which is, by the words of this court, alien to the disciplinary system. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stern. Now, Mr. Slipsky, you saved a little more than 4.5 minutes of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would like to address the property first and get it out of the way real quick because I think it's simple. It's very clear from the record that it was a key point of the arrangement. It was a requirement that he get additional space, that the deal you just described was part of going on staff with him. Stipulation at paragraph 11, in return for the staff position and salary, you agreed to rent space. It was all part of the deal. And when I posed the question, the recommendation report of the board is in my opinion, not quite on point on paragraph 37, because they said that there was no evidence there was anything wrong with the leasing of the office space. When I cross-examined Mr. Morford, I asked him to assume that he had to lease the space to get the job, and his answer was, and I quote, well, if it's in return for, it would be a bribe. I would like now to go on to the Gambrell case because respondent thinks it's so very distinguishable that it's almost inapplicable here. Yes, Mr. Gambrell was convicted of a felony. Actually, he pled guilty to the felony. It was mail fraud conspiracy, and that's because the kickback arrangement, the one $2,500 kickback arrangement that he engaged in, was they used the mails. How is that different than this case? I'm sure Mr. Gambrell would have loved to have had the federal government after the person on the other side so he could have helped him out and not been prosecuted. He didn't have that option. He was small potatoes. Everybody involved in that was small potatoes compared to this case. He admitted all of the facts, Gambrell did, so did Mr. Sinclair. The only thing we're arguing about here are the conclusions to be drawn from those facts and the sanctions to be imposed. He waived hearing. Well, we had a hearing here. It was all mitigation evidence. It was all designed to impress the panel to get a lighter sentence. United States Attorney Craig Morford is a household name in Northeast Ohio. Special Agent FBI Denholm flew all the way from Washington, D.C. to get there. The panel, especially the chair of the panel, was exceedingly enamored with that. And I think that's why they ended up with the recommendation that they did. They placed too much emphasis on those two individuals and how important those individuals said it was for Mr. Sinclair to testify to get trafficking. That's not what this case is about. This case is about, why did he decide to cooperate? When did he decide to cooperate? And how much mitigation should he be given for that? He should be given some. And we think that's what keeps him from a permanent disbarment and gets an only an indefinite suspension. They want to compare Gambrell because he violated four disciplinary rules. Here the panel and the board found that Mr. Sinclair violated five, two of them twice, which would be seven. And if you accept my argument on the leasing of the property, we're up to nine. But for the FBI becoming involved in this case, but for the fact that James Traficant had beaten Craig Morford in a federal criminal prosecution years before, and Mr. Morford knew that he was bad and wanted to get him, this conduct might still be going on. That's what brought an end to it, was the FBI. Attorney Sinclair facilitated a United States congressman's criminal activity. He facilitated it. He did nothing to stop it until the FBI confronted him twice. And even then, after the second meeting, he went back again and told Traficant. They end up in Mr. Sinclair's home, in his basement, burning envelopes. He still hadn't fessed up. He told the FBI he needed things to think about. That goes to public trust. That goes to your value to the justice system. If you look at Section 11 and aggravating factors, was there a prior disciplinary record here? Yes. Was there a dishonest or selfish motive? As I've already said, I believe there was a very selfish motive. I believe that Mr. Sinclair testified as well as he did because he knew it would help him. Well, it already helped him with statutory use immunity, and he believed it would help him down the road so that he wouldn't have to face the consequences of his activity. Were there multiple offenses? The panel said, no, I'm not so sure. There were 16 kickbacks. There was the falsification of a deed, and in our opinion, there was a rental of office space as a bribe.
You've used your time, Mr. Lipsky.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.